good song there. Number one hit from the Supremes. On this day in 1943, Florence Ballard, one of the Supremes, was born. On this day in 1943, she sang on 16 top 40 singles with the Supremes, including 10 number one hits like this one, Stop in the Name of Love. Ballard died in 1976. Florence Ballard from the Supremes, born on this day back in 1943. As we dig back into the world of music history here on the Steve Gruber Show. Scott Bertram sitting in for Steve at Steve Gruber Show on Twitter. Find me on Twitter at Scott Bertram, S-C-O-T-B-E-R-T-R-A-M. And SteveGruber.com for all sorts of exclusive content, giveaways, and the podcast. Click on that link there. All these segments from today's show, you want to re-listen? They're there. You want to hear them for the first time? You missed something? Those are there, too. SteveGruber.com. What do we know today on the coronavirus number, the COVID-19 numbers? Well, nationwide, the New York Times puts this right on the front page of its website each and every day. And that is in the past 14 days, we've seen an increase in cases of 76%, but a decrease in deaths by 26%. The giant question here, of course, will deaths be a lagging indicator of the cases? Meaning, all right, cases are down now in terms of deaths, or deaths are down now, but will they rise along with the case number in a week or two? Well, no one can predict that, certainly. Right now it looks not too bad in terms of death numbers. Every death is important. Zero would be perfect. But as we compare to the caseload increasing, the percentage falling in deaths, 26% over the past 14 days, looks okay. Here in Michigan yesterday, 236 confirmed cases across the state, four daily deaths. And Sunday is usually a lower day of reporting, but still 236 confirmed cases, four deaths across the state of Michigan. We talked yesterday about this. We're going to talk about it later. I imagine we'll revisit during the course of the week because I think it's a pretty darn big deal, and that is getting students back in classrooms in the fall, giving them the in-person education. And I talked after the show with a buddy of mine who lives in the Chicago area, and we had a great conversation about this because we're both on the same page and kind of pushed each other for various thoughts and more analysis. And this spins off the American Academy of Pediatrics study we talked about yesterday that said, hey, all policy considerations should start with the goal of having students physically present in school. It said it's not the flu. And by that, they meant it's less of a problem than the flu for grade school age students. They also said this, the 6 feet thing, maybe not so important in schools. They cut it down to three. Don't make arbitrary numbers like, oh, we're going to limit to 15 students in the classroom. That's not all that important. They said the other safety precautions you're taking in the context of education are more important. And there's this thing happening at this point where some analysis only considers students, children, to be vectors of disease and not as living, breathing human beings. The concern you hear is, oh, if students are back in school, they might carry the disease and bring it to me. Other adults can't have that, which ignores the wants, needs, desires of children, including the right to an education. There are so many things that are missed out upon with students not in school. Start with the in-person education, of course, but move on to identifying students who have learning issues, learning disabilities, who need help in the classroom who need help perhaps socially. There is an argument to be made that certainly, abuse cases, and the American Academy of Pediatrics talked about this, abuse cases are more likely to be found when the student is outside the home and in front of a classroom and with other students. There are so many factors to consider, including a student's mental health and well-being. And if we don't go back in person in the fall, what about students who are trying to make those transitions? How about a first-time student heading into kindergarten or heading into first grade or kindergarten who have never had that structure of a school classroom before? And now parents are having to put that in place. Or students who are transitioning from eighth grade to freshman year in high school and have no idea what a course load, what a class looks like in high school in person. A New York Times columnist, Michelle Goldberg, who I disagree with on essentially everything, even she can see the importance of this issue. Column today, remote school is a nightmare, few in power care. Government should treat the need to reopen schools as an emergency. She's one of the few in the mainstream media, including the New York Times, that is citing this study that we talked about from the American Academy of Pediatrics in her column. Now, her solution is not one I agree with. Her solution essentially points the blame at Senate Republicans, and the solution is spending a lot more money, and you can't do it locally. It's got to be done at the federal level, and Senate Democrats must act to give schools across the country more money. That's her solution. Is it part of it? I would have to do a little more research. But certainly, there's an opportunity for local districts to get ahead of this. Just like the colleges did. Purdue said, we're coming back in the fall, period. We're going to find a way. Schools have to do that as well at virtually every level. Scott Bertram in for Steve on the Steve Gruber Show.